Welcome to the Game Mystery Podcast, featuring interviews with some of the most renowned authors and up-and-coming talent in LGBTQ mysteries, suspense, and thrillers. I'm your host, Brad Shreve, and Justine Adamick is here with her weekly recommendation. Justine, as always, we're going to start with your review before we get to the interview, but I've got to give you a warning.
Okay.
I was up all night last night editing my novel. So if I hit a wrong button, I'm sorry. We may have to do another take.
Okay.
I will not be held responsible.
All right. Well, look, at least it's for a good cause. You're editing the novel, and everybody in our audience should be eager to read it. I know I'm eager to read it.
Well, I'm eager to finish it. So, and read it myself.
Well, you know, once you finish it, you're going to have to start the next one anyway. So I wouldn't be in too much of a hurry with you if I were you.
Well, that's true. So who are you reviewing today?
I am reviewing something we got through our submissions line. And anyone who wants to submit a book can send a copy, preferably in Mobi format, the Kindle format, to info@gaymysterypodcast.com. This book came in. It's Murder at White Oak by Marco Realmonte.
For those that don't know, Justine reads about 14 books a week.
I used to read about 14 books a week, but then we turned it into work. And, you know, I just like to avoid work, so I'm not reading nearly as much as I used to. I'm like, oh, gosh, I got to read that book. Well, I don't want to read it now.
Sorry I spoiled your fun.
That's not just you. Requeered Tales also has me reading books that I have to proofread. And, you know, I enjoy them, but once it becomes work, I put it aside.
I totally get that. So tell us about the story.
So it takes place in an English boarding school, and it is, characters are all mostly high schoolers. It appeals to the YA audience. However, they are the readers that I know who have read it, enjoyed it, and reviewed it well are very far into adulthood. Including me. So it has a cross appeal. One of the main characters is Jacob. He's very wealthy. He's got a somewhat distant father and horribly evil stepmother. And he got kicked out of a boarding school or a prep school in New York City for homosexual activities. And so his father ships him off to England. And so he goes to a small boarding school called White Oak. White Oak can take him, but they don't have a space in the various student housing. So they have him rent an elegant cottage on the grounds. And the cottage is empty because it's haunted. And they just want to kind of get the money without letting him know it's haunted. And in the notes ahead of time, the author tells you there's a ghost involved. And it's not a Scooby-Doo ghost. It's a real ghost. I really like the characters. Jacob is rich, and he's not uncomfortable or guilty about it at all. He showers people with money, and he uses his money to get himself out of jams. He's very smart. There's an ongoing theme where he is in English class, and he knows the Salinger novels quite well, and he knows all of the various English writers can talk about symbolism, and it's believable. He's also suicidal, and it's not clear why. I mean, it's very clear that he thinks about suicide all the time. He says that he thinks about it all the time. He does his term paper in English on the various authors who've committed suicide.
There doesn't always have to be a reason.
Right. So Timothy is the poor scholarship student. He's very sweet. I'm not sure there's an evil bone in his body. I'm not sure there's even a harsh word that could come out of his mouth. But he's not a milquetoast. He stands up for himself. And he is there on a music scholarship and plays violin. He plays at a virtuoso level. And Jacob swims at the Olympic level. So these characters are larger than life in some ways. You know, he's an Olympic swimmer. Timothy's a concert pianist, and Jacob's got a ton of money. So the usual things like, gee, Dad, can I borrow the car, aren't there, but they still struggle with their inner demons, with figuring out their place in the school, and also this ghost. The minor characters are particularly well written, and part of what makes them in depth is the book moves viewpoints every chapter. So while much of it is told from Jacob's viewpoint and much of it is told from Timothy's viewpoint, and then there's the third party narrator who I suspect is the ghost, although it's never says. But it also, there's a paragraph every now and then, or a chapter, short chapter, from one classmate's view or from a professor's view. Sometimes it's even from the gardener's view. That switch in viewpoints gives you a very good idea of the character in a very short period of time. The writing is very well done. It really gives you the feel of the countryside, gives you the feel of what it's like to be in the school. And it also increases the suspense, because on some level, this is a horror novel because it's a ghost story. So it gets a Cracker Jack recommendation. It's got a lot of twists and turns. There are a variety of exciting moments. You know, when the ghost first shows up, you don't know exactly if he's real. Somebody accosts them in the woods. There's a shocking moment there. So I think that all of it is twisty and turny and provides a fair amount of jump out at you kind of moments.
So the main mystery is finding out who killed the ghost.
That's right.
That's exciting. That's fun.
It's a great deal of fun. It's a good time. So that's my review of Murder at White Oak.
And we got a Cracker Jack.
Yes. Cracker Jack means that it's a bunch of different flavors together, just like the snack. You got a little salty, you got a little sweet, you got a little crunchy, and you got a nice surprise at the bottom of the box. So Requeered Tales released Some Kind of Love, the third and final book in the Jazz Anderson series. The cover has brighter colors on it than the previous two books, and the ending is a little lighter, but it rounds out the series nicely, and I think people will enjoy it.
And that's already out?
That's out 2 days ago.
Good deal.
Good luck on your interview today.
I thank you very much. I think it's going to be a good one. Interact with other crime fiction fans and authors in our Game Mystery Thriller Suspense Fiction group on Facebook. Links are on our website, GameMysteryPodcast.com. Tal Bauer is an author of gay romantic suspense thriller novels. He believes the world needs more gay heroes, gay love stories, and powerful women kicking ass, and tries to write those stories. With a background ranging from law enforcement to humanitarian aid, the stories are global in scope and with diverse characters in all roles. His goal is to help normalize gay characters as action heroes and to bring to life strong, dynamic, holistic women in all of his novels. Tal is married to a wonderful husband, and they live in Texas. Welcome, Tal, and thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to start with your series, Enemy of the State. And the reason I'm going to start with that is it's extremely popular. It was your the first of which is The Executive Office, that was published in 2017. Mm-hmm. And yep. This is the first novel you published. Is that correct?
This is.
All right. Well, tell us about that series.
Oh, man. So the Executive Office series starts with Enemies of the State. It's my first novel ever written, first novel published. It's the flagship of that series, and I think it's probably the novel that most people know me from online. And it is the question of how would the nation react to a president, a U.S. president, uncovering and discovering his own sexuality. So discovering that he is gay and entering into a relationship with a man, actually one of his Secret Service agents during his presidency. And that is set against terrorist threats in a thriller environment. And you got the coup by the military against the president and all sorts of overseas shenanigans going on. So it's fast-paced, even though it does sound like a bit of a slow romance. It's not. The pace keeps up there, and it's just a really fun series. So that's the first book.
Now, I got to say, I'm very jealous because for a new series and a first novel, it is, as I said earlier, immensely popular. What do you attribute that to?
God, you know, I have asked myself that question many, many times. And the honest answer, I think, is luck. I really do think that there's an element of black magic in publishing. And if you happen to publish something that is a little bit unique and a little bit slightly different in a good way to what everyone is reading at the moment, and something that's timely, then you can just kind of strike that magic chord and get people reading. And I think when I published this, I can't remember if it was 2017 or 2016. I think I finished it in 2016 and it was published early 2017. I'm not.
It's Amazon says 2017.
Okay. I did do a republish. So that might be the republish date. I'm not sure. But I know that I remember writing this during the 2016 presidential debates. And so the election hadn't happened yet. We were looking at the 2016 tumultuous election. And President Trump was a fantasy in an obscure world that we were all thinking would never come to pass. And I just think people were primed for sort of a political adventure in the midst of all that, what we look back on as craziness of that election. And so this came out, and I just think it hit the nail on the head for being unique in that time frame. So I think it was luck.
Well, congratulations on your luck.
Thank you.
I think it may have a little more to do than that, but you're probably right. Luck does have a lot to do in timing.
Yeah, I think timing and black magic and luck are big components of publishing in this industry.
Considering the large number of rave reviews that you've had, what is something memorable that you've heard from your readers?
I have about six main characters in this whole series. So the series is Enemies of the State, Enemy of My Enemy, and then Enemy Within. And Enemies of the State starts out introducing the two main characters of Jack and Ethan, President Jack Spires and Ethan Reichenbach. And we expand their social circle to include President Sergei Pushkov, Sasha, Russian fighter pilots, and then we have Adam and Faisal. And Faisal is one of the princes in the Saudi royal family, and he is gay, and he is proudly gay, and so he doesn't have any issue with his sexuality. And writing him in a Middle Eastern culture being proudly homosexual has probably been the thing that I get the most comments about in my email, the most feedback about. I've gotten quite a few emails about how refreshing and nice it was to see positive Muslim portrayal, right? So, and the reason why I chose to write him was that there needs to be more portrayals of all sorts of people, but Middle Eastern and Muslim and Islamic portrayals as well, where they are not just pigeonholed into being the bad guy. You know, we shouldn't just have Muslim characters being the terrorist or the one with the bomb or the, you know, we need to have positive portrayals across the board with everything, with gay men, with women, with minorities, with absolutely everything under the sun. And so I was very specific in my intention to do that. And I was really glad that readers saw that and readers reacted to it and that he became very much a fan favorite.
Well, I got to tell you, it's very commendable that your line of thinking, and that's pretty awesome.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Sometimes I feel like I'm kind of an activist author because I have all these intentions when I write my stories, and it's not just I want to write a thrill, or it's not just I want to write something that's a little bit romantic. I have these kind of deep intentions that I put into my writing, and I hope they come across to readers, and I'm always very gratified when they do.
Well, and you put in your bio that you like putting women that kick ass.
Yes.
Do you want to talk a little more about that?
Yeah. So, and when I heard you read the bio, I could see why it was a little bit confusing. I mean, I am a feminist, and I think that it's important that people say that, and not just women. I think it's important that men say that. I think it's important that men and women and everyone say that they are feminists and they are here to uplift women and uplift feminist causes and to make the world a more equal place. I mean, the women are 50% of the population, and to do anything that undermines 50% of the population is wrong. And so everything that I do to try to do something to fix that. For instance, when I'm writing, I always have in the back of my head, does this character have to be a man? Does this fighter pilot have to be a man? Does this doctor have to be a man? Does this admiral have to be a man? And if the answer is not no, or if the answer to that is, I'm twisting myself around, if they don't have to be a man, then I make them a woman. And so I think all of my fighter pilots so far and all of my stories across all of my series have ended up being female because of that question.
More people need to ask that question. Now, you told me earlier that your number one novel is Whisper.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, that is. Was published back in, I guess, 2018?
2018.
Tell us about that one.
Oh, Whisper. So it is the number one novel that I have, and that is a little bit surprising to me. One, because it's much more of a recent novel. I think Enemies of the State had about 2 years on it. But two, it's also my most intense novel. It is a sweeping retelling of the War on Terror. I call it a thriller and near historical fiction. The basic question is, what was it like to be gay in the CIA from the morning of 9/11/2001 onward? And the whole novel is a dedicated retelling of history as it happened. Right? It begins at 9/11 on the morning of 9/11 at 8:46 in the morning, and it goes almost day by day from there. And you have your CIA analyst who's brand new. He's been at the CIA for 2 years, and he is the guy who sits at the Afghanistan desk. And up until 8:45 on that morning, he was somewhat obscure, and not a lot of people knew what he did, and not a lot of people cared what he did. And he was just sort of biding time and thinking about getting out into the private sector. And within minutes, everything changes. And so it's his story. It's what happens in the minutes, hours, and days after that. How does he go about proving that it is Afghanistan and Al-Qaeda and the Taliban? And then what happens from there? He becomes part of the first-in CIA team into Afghanistan, paving the way for the military invasion. We go through the entire invasion with the CIA. And then we go all the way through to the battle in Tora Bora for bin Laden. We continue on through the capture of the character that I have put in place of Abu Zubaydah, who was Al-Qaeda's number three. It goes into the CIA's descent into deciding to torture detainees, and what that looks like at Detention Site Green in Thailand, and all the way through Iraq, all the way through the War on Terror in Iraq, and how all of these decisions made in the moments, days, and weeks following the morning of 9/11 come full circle again and again. And again, there's two main characters. There's Chris, who is the CIA analyst who we follow through the main eyes of the novel. And then there is David Haddad, who is an Army Special Forces officer who meets Chris in Afghanistan during the invasion. And he's Muslim. And so he wrestles with questions of Muslim identity and how he fits into the world in this new post 9/11 world. What does it mean when he's at Detention Site Green in Thailand? What does he see when he sees the CIA descending into the horrors that they descend into? Eventually the novel follows near history, almost day by day, up until 2009, December 30th, 2009, with the attack at Camp Chapman in coast Afghanistan. And so at that point, I split, and it becomes much more of a fiction novel, not much more of, but it becomes a fiction novel. And in that attack, I have one of the characters end up being kidnapped by Al-Qaeda and taken away, and they end up, they're left for dead, and they're thought long dead by the CIA, and they end up living for about 10 years in the mountains of Afghanistan with no contact with the Western world. And as they come out of the mountains, they're faced with basically one of those dastardly plots to attack America, and they're the only person in a position to stop it. And so what do they do after being left for dead for 10 years? One of my readers said it is my most favorite novel in the world that I will never, ever reread because of the intensity. I like that. I've had a couple of readers in my group organize a reread, and I've had several readers bow out of that. Like, I forgot how intense this was. Never mind, I'm done. I had one reader famously begin the novel without reading the blurb and ended up in absolute hysterics partway through, not understanding what they had gotten into. So it's a good novel. It's a really good novel, but you have to know what you're getting into. It's sweeping.
It always surprises me when somebody purchases a book without reading the blurb, and then you read the review later and they're like, well, I didn't know.
I mean, on the one hand, it was really sweet because she said, you know, it's a book of yours. I don't need to read the blurb. I know I'm going to like it. But at the same time, I thought, there's some important information in the blurb to know that you're getting into something very intense.
Well, that is flattering.
Yes, it was. But, you know, read the blurb.
I got to tell you, based on our conversation here, it's obvious you do a lot of research into your novels, which is one of the things that impresses me about many mystery and thriller writers. Given that it's obvious that you do quite a bit, what's the most interesting thing that you've learned in your research?
Oh, God. Really good question. So research, I think, is the most important thing for an author. And it is what takes a novel from good to great. You can build an immersive atmosphere for your readers through good research, and you can transport them wholly into your written world. Nothing will break a reader's fourth wall more than either sloppy research or even absent research. And I think sloppy research is worse than absent research because those incorrect details will stick out in a reader's mind forever, and they will never forget it. And so I like to liken research, especially in a contemporary setting, to the same kind of world building that you would do in a fantasy or science fiction. So I have an incredible depth of knowledge in my field, right? Incredible depth of knowledge in military and counterterrorism and governmental operations and global operations and whatnot. A lot of my readers don't. And so I have to build that world for them. I have to give them all the research that I have and all the knowledge that I have. And if you fail to do that, you'll fail to connect with the readers. So all of that has given me a huge amount of research to do. For the Executive Office series, a lot of that came from lived knowledge. You know, especially since it was my first novel, I was able to kind of pull from aspects of my past and things that I had personally done and things that I had personally lived. But then translating it into a novel that people could read and absorb and understand was really the fun part. In the EO series, there's the three books, Enemies of the State, Enemy of My Enemy, and Enemy Within. Enemy Within had probably the most research that I had to do outside of myself. There's lengthy submarine scenes. There's a nuclear submarine that takes the supposedly dead president of the United States on an undercover mission into the Arctic. And I absolutely adore those scenes because of how much research I had to do. I had maps of the Arctic seabed spread out of my office. I had compass heading charts. I had what would a sonar see, you know, at this ping depth, at this location in the Arctic, you know, where are the Arctic crevasses? Where does it drop off into nothing? What would a submarine pointed across, you know, the abyss see on their sonar? I just absolutely loved it. What would it be like transiting through the Bering Strait? It was wonderful. I just loved it. A big plot point in Enemy Within is K-27. And I always have to be careful not to say K-19, the Widowmaker. Every time I say K-27, I always picture Harrison Ford. It's horrible. So K-27 is a nuclear submarine that the Russians truly scuttled off of one of their islands in the Kara Sea up in the Arctic. And it's an active, functioning nuclear submarine full of nuclear fuel that you can turn into a bomb pretty easily. It's got two reactors, and it's loaded to the max with all its fuel, and it is sunk in shallow water in the Kara Sea. And so doing the research for that, finding out that, which was, you know, a crucial plot point of the bad guys' dastardly plans, was great. So I was working with the Norwegian Radiation and Nuclear Safety Authority, reviewing some of their research trips out into the Russian Arctic, you know, their cleanup expeditions, looking at their sonar imagery, looking at the reports that they have written on the K-27. So everything that I wanted to put into the novel, I wanted to be real world. I wanted this threat to be real. I wanted it to be something that wasn't just a hand wave. Nuclear is nuclear. No, this could truly become a nuclear weapon in the wrong hands. And it is a dangerous thing that is up in the Arctic.
Well, I got to say, it sounds absolutely exhausting, and you can tell you have an incredible passion for it.
Thank you.
Now, what book or books have had a strong influence on your writing?
So the authors I like to read are international in scope. And I like to get that breadth of experience and voice and global understanding. I think it's important to have that. So I don't want my worldview to be closed, and I don't want to just read Western voices. So some of the authors that I read, Leila Abu Leila, she's an author from the Sudan, Dmitry Kukovsky, Sergei Lukyanenko from Russia, Celestial Bodies is one of my recent favorite novels by Joka Alaharthi. It's the first novel that's originally written in Arabic to win the Man Booker Prize. And most importantly, it's the first ever book by an Omani woman to be translated into English. Kintu, written by Jennifer Makumbi, a Ugandan novel, was really important to me. And then Broken Stars, which was a contemporary Chinese science fiction anthology, which has been translated into English recently. That was important to me. And I think that all of these international novels, international voices, really help just give that understanding of what's going on in the rest of the world, what's going on out there, and how do people view the world? How do they view where the world is going, what their futures look like, and how we're all a part of this one big globe, even though sometimes it doesn't feel like it.
Your research, even in your reading, is impressive, I've got to say. Well, I'm going to change pace a little bit, but before I do that, I'm going to ask you what we call the awkward question authors get.
All right.
Okay. And what I do is I spin the wheel, and then whatever question comes up, that's what you get.
All right.
And hopefully you'll get one that's not too hard.
Love it. I always get awkward questions, so this will be great.
Okay. So sit back and let me spin the wheel here. Okay, what I've got for you here is, this one's probably a rude one.
Oh, lovely.
Why haven't you written a New York Times bestseller?
You know, I ask myself that question every single day.
And what's your answer?
Oh, why haven't I? It would be too easy to say I haven't been noticed by the right person or whoever does the whatever it is for Netflix, whoever scours books for Netflix hasn't found me yet, or readers haven't bought my books enough. All those answers are not true. I haven't written the New York Times bestseller yet because I haven't written it yet. So it's all my fault. It's no one else's fault but mine.
Well, so far it doesn't sound like that's true, but I'll take your word for it. So getting back to, I said I was going to change the pace a little bit from what we were talking about. You mentioned to me something off the air that was interesting about Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
You said you deleted your personal account but kept your author account. What's up with that?
Well, so I had a personal account long before I had a professional author Facebook account. And, over the years, I just stopped using it. Facebook didn't have any utility for me anymore. It was gross to go online and just see the same old crap. And especially in the last 4 years, I think it was even grosser to go online and see people that I had known for 10 years or more, all of a sudden come out with just all the crap and all the garbage that none of us want to see. Mm-hmm. I think we all saw things on Facebook from people we thought we knew that disgusted us in some way or form. And there were a couple ways to respond to that. You could mute those people, you could cut them out of your life, or you could cut Facebook out of your life. And as a lot of the privacy concerns with Facebook came to light, I realized that the answer that made the most sense for me was cutting Facebook out of my life. There was absolutely no impact to my life from getting rid of my personal Facebook. I don't miss it. The people that I was most connected to on Facebook that were true friends, I talk to over the phone or I text or I still message in other ways. So I haven't lost anything at all. Now, in terms of Facebook for my professional life, I can't have interpersonal connections and relations and chat relationships with thousands of fans. It would just be impossible. Mm-hmm. I would end up becoming a professional friend instead of a professional author, and that's not sustainable. So you need Facebook. You need Facebook. You need posts. You need wide networks. You need to be able to get your information as an author out to you know, however many thousands of people that you need to get it out to. And you need to build that feeling of connection. And Facebook, for all of the negative things that it is, it can foster connections far and wide between individuals. And so as an author, you need it. You absolutely need Facebook to connect with those readers. Now, does that come with all of the baggage that Facebook certainly has with the privacy concerns and a lot of the issues with Mark Zuckerberg and some of the political messaging that is wrapped up tight with Facebook and some of the controversy? Yeah, it does. And so that's an open question for me. Continuing on with Facebook is a necessity, but comes with a high cost. And so how do you balance that? And I don't have an answer for it yet. I'm obviously still on Facebook and I'm obviously still connecting with my readers that way, but it definitely is an open question.
Well, I struggle with that too. And I can tell you there are many, many, many authors that struggle with the same question, dealing with the privacy issues and that sort of thing. Have you ever heard of MeWe?
I have actually, and a lot of people don't know it, but I am on MeWe, and I figure as soon as I hang up from this, and as soon as this goes to air, I'm going to be inundated with people finding me on MeWe. But I am actually on MeWe, so ooh. Yes, I haven't found it to be, that great because I have been on MeWe for 2 years, and I have found exactly 3 of my readers. So it's not a very good connection platform for me at the moment. Now, maybe that's because I haven't actually gone out there and said, hey, I'm on MeWe. But I just haven't found a platform other than Facebook that can really connect to readers. Do you use MeWe? Do you like it?
Well, I have MeWe, and that's the reason I brought it up is for those that aren't familiar with MeWe, MeWe promises they aren't going to get into your privacy issues. Mm-hmm. They aren't going to deal with politics, no political ads, anything mm-hmm. of that nature. They're the anti-Facebook is really what they're trying to do.
Yeah, they are.
And as an author, a lot of people may not know this. If you have an author's page and you want to get your message out to people on Facebook, sometimes you have to pay a large amount of money if you want everybody to see your message. MeWe only charges like $2 a month and everybody will see it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So it's a great deal. The problem with MeWe, because I love the interface, I love the way it works, I love the way their groups are set up, I think MeWe is a great alternative to Facebook. The problem is, as you said, no one is there.
No one's on MeWe.
No one is there.
No one's on MeWe at all.
And hopefully between our conversation, we'll see some more people get on there because I would like to see that.
Hopefully. So,
And I do not work for MeWe, nor do I get a kickback.
we're not MeWe shills.
So tell me about your July novel that you published and about a little bit about that story.
So the July novel was actually a special event. I decided to do something fun for my readers. I said, I want to write a book in a month on a topic chosen by you. So I gave my readers and my reader group a poll. And they were all allowed to vote on any topic that they wanted me to write. And military, thriller, rom-com, which had me sweating bullets because I didn't know how on earth I was going to do that. horror, paranormal. I mean, it ran the gamut. I can't even remember. There were about 20 different categories. And so the winner ended up being a military novel. So I thought, excellent. This was right in my wheelhouse. I know exactly what I'm going to do. I mean, I literally have no idea what I would have done if it were rom-com, but since it ended up being military, I was like, yes.
So what was the name of that story again?
This is Soul on Fire, and it came out in July of 2019. And one of my readers, Jeff, described it beautifully as a geopolitical thriller. I love that description. Thank you very much, Jeff. And in the middle of an Ebola outbreak in Congo, a terrorist arranges to exchange active Ebola virus for unknown weapons, and the U.S. gets hint of that. And so the Navy sends a SEAL lieutenant by the name of Elliot Davis to find out some intelligence and information about this and to stop this weapons exchange. But the terrorist disappears into the Congolese jungle. And so Lieutenant Davis has to chase him into the jungle and cross Congo, which is one of the harshest places on earth for all of humanity. I mean, I've been there. I spent a lot of time in Africa. I lived in East Africa and Central Africa, and the Congolese jungle is one of the most punishing environments on the planet. And so he teams up with his guide, Dr. Ikolo Nagandu, who's a Congolese doctor running humanitarian aid in a hospital treating Ebola patients. And they end up crossing the Congo together. And along the way, they meet Congolese people, and they meet rebels invading the Congo, and they meet, interestingly enough, Chinese investors and mine operations, CIA embedded in the middle of the Congo. And all the while, they're in the wake of this terrorist transporting the Ebola virus and an active infection and trying to stop a global catastrophe. So it's an interesting chase, ticking time clock, ticking bomb, and geopolitical thriller, as Jeff said. And it ended up being one of my proudest books of 2019. And the fact that it was written in a month, I still don't know how I did it. But kudos to my editor, who I wrote it in 21 days, and then she turned it around in, I think, a week. So it was an incredible team effort on that one, and she did a really good job. And so that's probably the one that I would recommend most to any reader who wants to pick up a new book of mine.
I was going to say, I love the way that you went about allowing your readers to choose the story, the subject. So let's give it one more promo. What's the name again?
It's called Soul on Fire, and it's by me, Tal Bauer.
Okay, so if you want an introduction to Tal Bauer, that's the book to get.
Excellent, thank you.
So let me ask you, Tal, what set off the spark to write what you write, the type of books that you write and the genre that you write in?
Good question. This is something that's actually always been very close to my heart. When I set out to write, I actually set out to write novels that I couldn't personally find that I wanted to read. Growing up, when you're searching for gay fiction or gay books or gay literature, you mentioned offline that we had an experience going into Barnes and Nobles and looking at the itty bitty teeny tiny shelf that they used to have, and it would be like one shelf on the very bottom, and it would have literary or coming out or biographies, and then there'd be a handful of novels that were. I remember getting my first Mel Keegan book, and it was erotica mixed with a pirate adventure story, and that was the first time I'd ever held a gay fiction novel that had a semblance of a genre, and I loved it, and I was always hunting for more of that. And then the MM community popped up in the early mid 2000s, and that took off. And even in the MM community, I still struggled to find thrillers and adventure novels that were comparable to mainstream thriller novels that just had gay leads. And so that was what I wanted. That was what I was searching for. And that was what I wrote. I do think that in comparing my thrillers to mainstream thrillers, there's a little bit deeper dive into the psychology of the characters, be them gay or straight or everything in between. And I attribute that actually to my guilty cheat novels that I love are kind of the Gillian Flynn-esque novels, mm-hmm. with that really deep psychological dive. So I've tried to combine all of that together and create what I hope is almost a new subgenre, which is, Hush charted on, it was top 20 in the mainstream thrillers when it came out, which is Hush is the prequel to Whisper. And I was ecstatic with that. But I also wanted to see it do really well in a gay thriller genre, which I'm not sure if Amazon actually has that yet. Do they have the gay thriller? They have gay mysteries, right?
It's actually called Gay Mystery Thriller Suspense.
Okay.
So it's all combined together.
It's all combined together. I do think that there are lines between each of those, and I think that mixing them all together does a reader a disservice. But I'm hoping to grow. I'm hoping that each of those subgenres, gay mystery, gay thriller, and gay suspense, will grow. And I hope to be a part of that.
Well, it sounds basically to me like you want. What the show is all about is novels that are mysteries or thrillers or suspense novels where the character just happens to be gay.
And, happens to be gay.
Yeah, and we get obviously into the the story of who they are, because that's who right. we are, but it's not the focus of the book.
It's not the focus of the book. It's not a coming out story. It's not a biography. It's not a, this is the dissection of my life, nor is it a, this is my quest to find a partner. There may be the finding of a partner along with the thriller story, because that's just an aspect of the human condition, right? We all want to find someone who we connect with. But partnership and romance is not at the top. The fact that the person, the character, is gay is not the force of the story. The fact that there is a problem, there is a ticking clock, or there is a mystery, or there is a dead body, that is the story. And the gay character is there to solve it.
Well,
the gay character is there to be the hero.
I got to ask, what's wrong with you? Because there aren't nearly enough novels about coming out experience.
what was that? Like, I mean, the 70s, 80s was, there was quite a lot of that. And then the 90s was the huge crux of coming out novels. And mm-hmm. the gay fiction from the 60s all the way, even still now, right? Gay fiction is really defined by, what does it mean to be gay? What is the gay experience? And a huge part of that is the coming out novel. But yeah, that is a defined genre of gay fiction. You can find all those novels there.
Yep. It's an important subject, but I think there's plenty of them out there.
It is a very important subject. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I got to tell you, it has been a pleasure to have you on the show.
This went by really fast. I didn't think it would go this fast.
Well, because you're relaxed and easygoing, and
definitely not relaxed, actually.
I look forward to when you have the next book coming out, because I'd like to have you back on as a guest. You've been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Hit the subscribe button wherever you hear our show so you don't miss a single episode. Tell a friend too. Thank you for listening.